Hello, hello, and welcome back to Retrieving Sanity with your podcast host, Keegan. And this is your podcast for all mental health, addiction, recovery issues, and topics. And today we have a very special guest, and that would be Brian.
Hey, everybody. My name is Brian. I am, I'm 40 years old and currently studying the world of sobriety for the first time ever in my life. I battled with addiction for over two decades of my life, and after finally realizing that it was imminent death, I decided, well, not decided, it was chosen for me to take a different path, and through taking that different path, I now have a life. I started off in addiction at a very young age. It didn't start with drugs and or alcohol. It started with lying and stealing. The first time I ever stole something, I got such a rush out of it that I got away with it, that I kept on doing it. And it followed me all the way through my life. I've been to prison because of it. Lying became second nature, just like talking now. It was like some people's second language is sarcasm. I was fluent in lying. Like, I was very, very good at it, or so I thought, for the longest time. But it escalated even more once I started using. I drank at a young age and never really got into it until I left home. I can't say that, because I used to steal my dad's beer out of his refrigerator, go drink it in the shower, then hurry up and go to bed and go to sleep for the night. But I mainly started stealing his alcohol because I didn't want him to drink that much. So I figured if he had less and I had taken it, then things couldn't escalate to the way that they escalated in our household. I won't bash my father, but it was very difficult living in the household with him. Never knew what I was going to do right, never knew what I was going to do wrong. But it was very hard to get a good job or a pat on the back, even when I did things right. So, like, I always... the easiest way to get attention from him was to do something wrong. And I took that with me for a very long time. Up until it led me to get kind of removed from the house, kicked out of the house. I had stolen a pack of cigarettes and tried to lie my way out of it. And by doing so, I was asked to leave the home. It was in the middle of a snowstorm. I ended up having to leave with nothing that was bought for me. You want to leave, you're leaving with what you got on. You ain't taking nothing I bought you. That's when the alcohol picked up. Right after that, I wrecked a motorcycle and did some extensive damage to my body, which is when I was introduced to pain meds. Through those pain meds, I found a numbness. I found an outlet for everything that I ever felt in life. And I used because I could. Like, nobody was going to stop me. I was out on my own. The friends that I had circled myself with were right along with using with me as well. I would give them my drugs of choice, and I would be able to drink with them, and that led to many, many bad things happening. I never really ran with a younger crowd. I never really ran with anybody that was my age. I always ran with older people, because, one, for the fact of the wisdom, I always tried to be, even when I was at home with my father, when his friends were around, I always tried to be around them because I always tried to learn something. Like, I loved the war stories. Like, my father was a military man. I loved learning about the military way of life. The things that, like, hunting, like, for times when I wasn't even around, when my dad would go out hunting, and the kills that he would get, like, the animals. And just learn, just being around them. And I took that with me throughout life. Like, even in sobriety, like, I try to surround myself with people that have obviously more years than me, because that's where a lot of, like, my experiences come from. Like, I get to learn. Nothing that I go through now has not been gone through by somebody before me. And I listen. Very often do I ever not speak on something. Like, I'm very glad that I have a sponsor that isn't one of those ones where I don't want you to say nothing for the first 90 days. I just want you to talk and listen, because that wouldn't work for me. Like, I have learned to be very vocal about my feelings and my emotions throughout sobriety, because I always had to congest them during life. I grew up in a small town where drinking was an outlet. Like, I remember my buddy who's passed away now. Todd Lewis, aka Lump Jones, me and him used to go out. We would start parties and just to see who would show up. Like, we would buy a couple kegs, underage buying kegs, and just to see who would show up at these things. And they ended up being great, great events. But like, I was very, very rebellious against everything that was right. I got multiple underages. I've never had a driver's license. I've gotten driving while under suspensions. Just recently, two years ago, I got 3 DUIs within 90 days of each other. But I've always tried to find an easy way out, and the easy way out was to get high, numb my feelings and emotions, and just forget about life and everything that I was doing. My parents split up when I was very young. I lived with my father. My mother moved on to have, there was a child before me, my big brother Robert, and my two younger sisters after she had left my father. And for the longest time, up until I turned 14 and I met my brother, I thought I was an only child. After I met my brother, we didn't have any more contact. But in while I was in prison from 2010 to 2011 for an addiction-based robbery, burglary, my brother reached out to me. And when I made parole, when I maxed out in 2014, I had reached out and found out that I had two sisters. Not only that I had two sisters, but they literally lived 45 miles away from me. So in finding them, everything changed. But I'm going to go back a little bit. With the abandonment, like, I always felt like my mom abandoned me. Like, why did she leave me? Why does she never want to come back and see me? And that followed me through life. I always vowed that I would never be violent with my kids. I always vowed that I would do everything that I could possibly do to not be my father. And instead of doing what I should have done to not be my father, I chose to vacate my whole responsibilities as a father. I have 3 children, and my oldest son is about to be 18. He turns 18 in May. My middle child is 2009, going to be 13. The day before my birthday, which is also my mother's birthday. And my youngest, I believe, is 11. I've never been a part of the youngest's life. I've been a part of my daughter's life, my middle child's life for, I think, 2, maybe 6 months. I got out of prison when she was 18 months old, and then I'd end up violating parole and going back to max out that last sentence. And my son, me and his mother had some issues. I won't bash her. I couldn't bash either one of them. They raised my kids, their kids, to the best of their capabilities without me being around. I have been all over the East Coast through my addiction and my alcoholism. I've been up to Maine. I've been down to Florida. I've been over to Texas, and I can barely, like, looking through like some of the pictures that I get from my friends, I don't remember being in any but 3 of them states. And it's crazy too, because like, I could have done anything in them states to get arrested. I could have hurt people. I don't know any of this. Like, that's the hardest part of this, is the fact of the matter that I just went about my life without a single care or a single worry in the whole damn world. But I just kept on going. I kept on trucking. I kept on doing whatever I needed to do to feed my addiction and run away from all responsibilities. After I had met my sisters, everything changed. I became a brother. I became an uncle. Their father took me under his wing as his own son. He didn't have to do that. But he gave me some guidance, and he showed me some ways of life that needed to be lived instead of running from things. I lived from 2014 to 2019. I lived like drinking, smoking weed, doing things that weren't in the addictive lifestyle. I mean, I was working, trying to work, at being the best version of me that I could be on a daily basis. That was my number one goal. When I got up every morning, I would get up with the mindset to be better than I was yesterday. But in 2019, I relapsed. I found one of the most deadliest, dangerous drugs that I've ever been introduced to, called crystal meth. And it ruined everything. The first hit, I was hooked. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what was going on. It was introduced to me by what I thought was a friend of mine. And it took me down into a downward spiral. In 2019, in December of 2019, I had a hallucination that my best friend killed himself in front of me. I was awake for 13 days straight. And by this hallucination, I envisioned him committing suicide in front of me. Like, it was so real that I went into a blackout. And when I came out of that blackout, I was 3.5 counties away from where I was located. Well, no, 4 counties. I found myself in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was in possession of things that I should not have been in possession of, including drugs, money, and a gun. I had no idea how I got these things. I had gotten a ride back to my hometown of Bradford and played it off like nothing happened. Like, my family doesn't know any of this happened. But I just kept on that continuous cycle. In March of 2021, I was helping my uncle and my sister move. And I had rented the U-Haul in my name without a license. And I had drove through a bank parking lot. And I had hit, I went going under around a pavilion. And I, the back of the box truck had knocked down a camera. And by doing this, I was on camera driving through. I had pulled the box truck into my grandmother's driveway and I was surrounded by police. I was arrested that day. I was found in a small possession of methamphetamines, crystal meth. When I was driving through the ATMs, I pull up ATM and a walk-up ATM. I parked at the walk-up ATM, climbed out, got the money out of the ATM, drove over to my grandma's, and that's when the police surrounded me. They found me with the small possession of methamphetamines, about $600 cash, baggies for sales, a scale, and a couple other things that were in my possession, paraphernalia, methods of getting high with the meth. And I was arrested right there in my grandmother's driveway, with my nanny watching, which is my grandmother, my nan, rest in peace, my father, my sister's father, my father, both my sisters, my nephews, the whole neighborhood there was there to watch me get arrested that day. It was demoralizing. And when I got into jail, I went through the whole COVID procedure. I was in lockdown for 5 days until they passed the whole COVID test. And when I did this, when I got on the block, I called my family. Which it comes back to the lying. I swore up and down that I was going to get out. I was going to get clean. I was going to go to rehab. I was going to do everything that I possibly could to turn my life around so that when it came time to sentencing, I didn't have to go to jail. That never happened. My baby sister helped me post bail, with some of my money, some of her money. And I hit the ground running. I wasn't even out on bail for a half an hour and I was already high again. And for the next, from April 7th until December 2nd, when I went back to jail, this is my mugshot of when I got arrested in March 21st. I can't even get that angle on this damn thing right. March 21st, 2021. I was 120 pounds, strung out, didn't care about life, didn't care about living, didn't care about nothing but getting high. When I was sitting in the tank being the day that I was arrested, I tried everything in my power to sit still. I was high out of my mind, and I could literally see myself in the camera that was on me in the other room. And I watched myself try to stay still. But I was up at the cages. I was on the floor. I was on the bench. I was sitting on the toilet. I was doing this. I was moving everywhere. And I'm just thinking, what the hell am I doing? Like, what the hell am I doing? Like, I got to stop doing this. And that's, I ended up in jail, posted bail. But it was just, it got even crazier from there. Like, I met a woman and I fell in love with her. And I feel like I took her hostage. She had a good life, even though that she had her, she was battling her own things, but we were each other's comfort. I love her. I loved her. I love her to this day. And it's scary to think that the one night when we were coming back, I take times out of my life to have special conversations with my mother. Even though that she wasn't in my life, after I found out what had happened and why she had decided not to come back in, I had forgiven her. She had passed away when I was 14. So I had, like I said, I take my own times out to go talk to my mom. On this particular night, I had taken this woman that I was with out to one of the lakes in Bradford, PA. And when we were coming back, I don't know how it happened. I don't know why it happened. But her and I both blacked out behind at the same time. I was behind the wheel, once again, not having a license. And when I came to, I was stiff-armed on the wheel. My feet were slammed on the brakes, and we were going through what I didn't know what we were going through. I didn't know if we were going over a cliff. I didn't know if we were... We were 3 inches away from a porch, and if it wasn't for the shrubbery that stopped the car, we would have been in this person's living room, went through a gas line. But when we went, when I stopped and looked and surveyed the scene, we had, when we went off the road, literally, it was 666 West Washington Street. And there was a mailbox. There was a yard ornament wishing well. There was a tree stump. And there was a hole in the yard that was probably about a foot deep. And the car went in between every single one of those, missing them. Getting out of the car, I put her in the driver's seat. I was out on bail. I was high, and I was scared. And she was absolutely flabbergasted. She had told the cops that we swerved to miss a deer. The cop was like, oh, where'd the deer go? And like, I don't know. We were in the yard. It was all the unmanageability, the powerlessness over everything. Like, I had absolutely no control over my life. I hadn't had control over my life in such a long time. I was always living to appease other people. I always tried to do the best I could for everybody else while not worrying about my own safety and sanity. Even when I wasn't using, I was a yes man. I could never tell anybody no. It was a very hard way to live my life. When I went to prison in December of 2021, I thought that getting out, I was going to be sober. I was originally sentenced to 10 months to 2 years, but I asked the judge to send me to state prison because there was more rehabilitation and more programs where I could learn how to live in a sober living situation, a sober life. I was sent to the other side of Pennsylvania, to SCI Chester, which is in Delaware County. It's like 8.5 hours, 9 hours from where I live now. And I went to the TCCBT program, the Therapeutic Community Cognitive Behavioral Thinking Program. And I thought I was okay. I made bail after I completed TC. I got out of jail October 25th, 2022. And when I got out, the woman that I was with, while I was in, she went to rehab to better herself for us. And when I got out, I tried to contact her for like 3 or 4 days. And typical, I thought that her not communicating was her way of saying goodbye. So like on the third day, I was like, no, I get it. I love you. I just want you to let you know, like, if you ever need anything, I'll be here. And she messaged me back. She's like, it's not that I don't want to be with you. It's that I'm back out using again, and I'm on the run from the police. I don't know if it was my words or what I said to her, but she had turned herself in on 11-1. And 6 days later, in downtown where I live now in Erie, Pennsylvania, I relapsed. I was in a CCC center for parolees, which is a place to go for parolees that don't have a home plan. As soon as I got back there, they knew. I gave them a urine the next morning. It came back dirty. But mind you, from 2017 up until May of this past year, I was on Suboxone for opioid addiction, stemming from the opioids used for so many years. When I left the rehabilitation center known as Gage House, for the place that I live in now, they're not allowed to have any single serve any narcotics. It's a zero tolerance policy here. But I went on and Sublocade, which is the opioid injection, the opioid blocker injection. I've never been a fan of needles ever in my life. I could sit down and get a tattoo any day of the week, but I cannot. I could never do intravenous drugs. And May to July, I was going once every 28 days to get this injection in my stomach. And I finally had enough. The needle scared me. The injection scared me. And I went cold turkey. They don't recommend that you do that, but I did. I stopped July 24th of 2023 last year. And about mid-September is when I went through like a week of hell. It was not like the normal withdrawal effects. It was just like 1 minute I'm fine, next minute I'm profusely sweating. We had a vigil for one of my friends in recovery for her son, downtown Erie. And like right in the middle of it, I had to lay down and take a nap. I stopped everything I was doing and I laid down in the middle of this vigil and took a 20-minute nap. And I got up and I was fine. It's just... everything that I did in addiction was absolutely mayhem. I don't know how I'm still alive from somebody not killing me or me not killing myself, although I've tried on multiple occasions. In December of 2022, I was sent to a Correctional Treatment Center for parolees, because I had given another dirty urine. The only time that I had used was during the month of November. Well, not during the month, that one day in November, on November 7th, which is my clean date. But somehow, one way or another, on December 29th, I gave another dirty urine for methamphetamines. My parole officer told me the first time, if you get another dirty, you're either going to prison or you're going to rehab. The second one, I threatened him with everything that I had. I was like, I wasn't using, and I wasn't. On my mom, I wasn't using. And he sent me, he's like, you can either go to prison or you can go to rehab. I said, fill out the paperwork. Wherever you send me is where I'm going. And it wasn't so nice. Like, there was a couple other choice words in there. I think I challenged him to fight me. I was not in my right frame of mind. Being out of prison, not being able to be around my family for the holidays, it really bothered me. And then that added on top of it. But when I went out to the CTC center, I had been 3 days. I'm jumping all around here. That was on December 29th. On December 22nd, I had had a battle with depression. I was the Suboxone program here in Erie. You have to go up and get your dose on a daily basis. December 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, I did not go. I was battling with depression. I didn't even get out of bed. I didn't even leave the center for those 3 days. On December 25th is when like all the cravings and stuff started kicking in for the Suboxone. And I went up there to go take my dose. And they had informed me that after 72 hours of no contact, I was discharged from the program. December 29th, I was sent out to Gateway CTC, the Correctional Treatment Center for parolees. And on January 9th, I wrapped the sheet around my neck and tried to kill myself because I couldn't deal with the cravings anymore. There was somebody in there that was giving me little bits here and little bits there of Suboxone because they were allowed to have it in there. But they were like, your dose is watched until it dissolves in your mouth or their film is gone or whatnot. But they were able to mask it and bring it back. And that's like giving me little bits to take the edge off. The little bits weren't enough anymore and I couldn't take it. I woke up, I couldn't sleep. When I did sleep, I was waking up 20 minutes later, like with my stomach in pain, and I finally had enough and tried to kill myself again. They sent me to the Mill Creek psych floor up here in Erie, and from there I went to Gage House, which is a dual diagnosis mental health drug addiction recovery place, and that place saved my life. It was where I learned that it was okay for men to feel emotion, which was everything that I've masked. It's okay for men to have feelings. It's okay for us to talk about everything that's going on in our life without retribution or some sort of backlash for having these feelings and emotions. It was through that branch that I learned that it was okay to not be okay. I had felt for so long, I was running from something. I had no idea what I was running from. I was running from me. I was running in from who I truly wanted to be and what I wanted to be in all my life. All I've wanted to be since I was younger was a father. All I've wanted to be was somebody that somebody could pick up the phone and call and know that I was going to be reliable and know that I was going to be there. And I have that today. The one thing that I wish I had the most is my kids in my life. My son's soon to be 18. My daughter's 13. My youngest is 11. And I don't have contact with them. And that's my fault. I can't blame their mothers for guarding them from me. I always thought it would be easier to not be there than it would to be there with the destruction that I was causing. Because I had grown up in a household with addiction, with alcoholism, and I didn't want that for them. So it was easier for me to stay away than it was to be an in and out or a convenience father, just being there when it was convenient for me. So I just stayed away. And that was one of the things that I was running from too, my own bad, selfish decisions. My children are beautiful. My son is a very handsome man. I see pictures of him every now and then. My daughters are absolutely beautiful, but to be able to see them, I think would change my whole perspective on life. Like that's one of the things that I deal with lately. Like, I know that I'm doing everything right. Why can't I see them? Because their mothers are protecting them. They don't want to give them that chance. Like, I've lied to my son so many times. Like, oh, I'll be there. I seen him when I got out of prison in 2014 for a half an hour. And I turned around and left and never went back. I can't blame them for not wanting to let them see me. I can't blame my children's mothers for not letting them want to see me. That's my fault. And I have a lot to do and I have a lot to make up for. I have battled with mental health issues all my life, the ADHD, the bipolar, a manic depressant. I got an intermittent explosive disorder. And on top of that, visual hallucination, I was diagnosed with PTSD. Like certain things, like loud noises freak me out. I have a door on my room and like every once in a while, I think I hear somebody moving my knob and I'm 6 feet from my door. I fly over there and open it up just waiting for somebody to come through. It's just like, I've been doing this thing for so long that I don't even know who I am in sobriety. Like, I deal with this, what some call, I stole this from somebody else in recovery. Identity, like, how did I say it before? Oh, I can't even remember how I said it. But I don't know who I am. I've dealt and lived my life one way for so long that I don't know who I am in sobriety. Like, I try, like, I'm so scared to make friends because I've not only done things to sabotage friendships, but I've also been stabbed in the back when I had pure, great, wonderful intentions of trying to help somebody. I want to wake up tomorrow knowing that everything that I did today was to the best of my capabilities and the best of my abilities. Working with my sponsor, I have learned that there's a lot more than drugs and alcohol I'm powerless over. I'm powerless over my mental health, but I'm not powerless on how I react to it. Just because I'm depressed doesn't mean that I can't get out of bed and function. I have to force myself to get up, because if not, I will lay in my bed for days and I won't move. I'll go to the bathroom, I'll do the bare minimum, and I'll come back to bed and I will lay here. The worst thing that was ever created for me was this thing right here. I can get lost in this for absolutely no reason. TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, I'm stupid with it, knowing damn well that I can put that thing down and go be social. but being social scares me. I wasn't diagnosed with like social anxiety or any anxiety like that, but being around people, I live with 10 other people in this house. And when I get around like more than two or three of them, like I have to go do something else. And I'm the head of house here. Like I help coordinate like the house meetings and like the food orders and stuff that get put in for a week. And to give me a responsibility like that absolutely baffles me, because I wasn't able to be trusted with $10 to be able to give it back 3 days later. And now I have to help wrangle people together for house meetings, and I need to, it keeps me having to stay positive, because like if they see something's wrong with me and I don't talk about it, that means that they can stay dormant and they can't talk about it. And like I have learned that who I am around other people affects other people. Like if I'm ignorant, if I want to be ignorant or asinine towards somebody, that's how they see me. And I don't want to be seen like that no more. Like I just don't want to be the guy that's whispered about when he walks, oh, that's him. Oh, that's him. Remember when he did that? Like I want to be talked about when I walk in a room, be like, hey, there he is. Thank you for helping me the other day, man. I really appreciated it. Thanks for picking up the phone when I really needed somebody to talk to. You don't know what I was going through. I do know what you're going through, because I've been the one that's needed somebody to call and nobody's been there. I said in my last lead that I don't deserve this life. After all the hell that I've caused, I've done a lot of bad things to a lot of good people. And some of them good people are my family. But I get to hang out with my sister. I've got to hang out with my sister like every other week. She moved up here locally to me. I get to hang out with her like every 2 weeks. We just went home on Sunday back to Bradford. I went to a meeting that night. I was going to leave a half hour early. My dad's like, what are you doing? I was like, going to a meeting. He's like, the meeting don't start till 7. What are you doing? I said, you go early, you help set up, you stay late. I said, it's over at 8. I'll be back about 8:30, quarter to 9. And that's when I showed up. I showed up about 8:30, quarter to 9, because I helped set up. I went in. I helped make coffee. I helped set out the booklets. I talked to the people that were there. I ran into a damn good friend of mine that I had used with. And seeing him come in them rooms and him seeing me, him still inactive with me in sobriety, weighing 240 pounds at 6'3 instead of 120 pounds, gave him a different perspective. If I can do it, anybody can do it. I mean, I chased drugs. I chased a life that could have killed me for 2.5 decades. And here I am with a little over a year of sobriety, not regretting my past, because it's honestly made me who I am today. Like, I'm a man of my word. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. If I can't, I won't. I can't help you today. I have this going on. Like, there's been a couple of times my sister's like, do you want to go, like, last night, Saturday night, she's like, do you want to go to a hockey game with me? I was like, I can't. I have my home group. I'm secretary of my home group. I have service work. I have responsibilities. And I can't just like, oh, yeah, I can go and pass it off to somebody else, because that's not their responsibility. It's my responsibility. Like, being a responsible father. Something that I passed up, something that I can't wait, and hopefully I get the chance to do. But if it doesn't happen, I know that I've done everything that I can to make it happen. And I'm still going to continue to try. I'm not going to give up and throw the towel in like I used to. There's no quit in me anymore. It's all fight. I've fought to stay high. I've fought to ruin my life. I'm going to fight to stay alive. I'm going to fight to stay sober. What baffles me is when I go into the rooms on birthday nights and I hear somebody say that they have 45 years of recovery, sobriety from drugs and or alcohol. And it baffles me, because there's so much that happens. There's so much that could have happened in them 45 years. The loss of children, the loss of a loved one, the losses of jobs, so like all anything that could be detrimental to sobriety, they made it through. And hearing the stories of these people that have that time, if they can make it through, I can make it through. If I can make it through, you can make it through. And if you think you can't make it, call me. If you feel that urge, you feel that craving, call me. You can find me. I'll put my name's right up there in the corner of my little picture there. That's my name on Facebook. If you need somebody to talk to, send me a message. I'll be more than glad to help. This recovery is no, like, addiction is no joke. I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. I have a disease that tells me that I can go out and use again one more time and come back in. I may have another use in me. I guarantee I don't have another recovery, because once I go, I'm off to the races. And I have to keep that mentality. I have to absolutely know that if I go back out into them streets, I'm dead. I have a couple health issues that I'm dealing with right now. I got an umbilical hernia. I got an MCL, an ACL, and a PCL injury to my left knee. But I can't let it stop me from being mobile. I have to go to my meetings. I have to stay active. Because if I stay in this bed and I stay in my mind, I'm going to I battle with demons that are sometimes stronger than my own willpower. But I have to be stronger than them. I'd say that's scary to even think that. That sometimes, like, the voices in my head tell me it's okay to go use. Nobody's going to know this, that, the third. I'm going to know. And, like, integrity is a big part. Like, how I am right now is how I am when you're not around. I try to be, like I said earlier, the best version of me that I can be, not only for me, but for my sisters. Because when somebody goes to them, they're like, oh, how's Brian doing? They get to tell them, Brian's doing good. Brian has going on the 7th, I'll have 17 months of continuous sobriety. He's working the program. He's doing everything that he's supposed to be doing. And like, I get to like, I go on road, like go on a road trip with my sister, 2 hours home, an hour and a half home. And when I walk in the door, my dad's not hiding his wallet. His girlfriend's not hiding their purse. My sister's not hiding it. My other baby sister's not hiding her things. Everything's left out. I can walk through the house freely, come and go, because they know that I'm doing the right thing. Like, I can't ask for much more than I have today, because I don't want to be greedy. I'm given everything that I'm supposed to have. And anything else that comes at me, I'm grateful for. I have been in the Pagans in Recovery meetings for a little over 4 months now, and the people in these meetings helped save my life. I was going through things a couple days ago, and as soon as we got out of the meeting, my phone went off literally every hour on the hour for people checking on me to make sure I'm okay. Because people care about me today. They care about whether I'm alive. I care about whether I'm alive. I try not to worry about tomorrow. I can't fix yesterday. So just living in the now is all I have. And it's absolutely phenomenal, like, the things that I have today. Like, I may not have much, but what I do have, I hold true, and I love with all my heart. The relationship that I was in, I terminated, and it wasn't out of anything that she did. It was out of everything that I'm going through. I at times feel like I'm a burden to people, and not being able to work because of a knee injury, not being able to be with her because we're both in the same situation, was putting me in a frame of mind where I was battling with depression again. Like, oh, she, like, I was worried about her going to finding someone else to replace me. So I stopped our relationship. I had just asked her to marry me New Year's last year. And on my 16th month mark, I ended the relationship because I just so scared that I was going to push her away with the way that I was doing. So it was easier for me to just be a friend. And I hope we talk, but it's not like we used to, because I don't want to scare her with the things that are going through my mind. And I know that I can tell her anything, but it's just the things that go through my mind today are some of the things that I used to go through before, and I can't numb them anymore. Like, I deal with like cravings every day. Like, I had a very bad one the other morning because, like, I go through pain every day. Like, I had surgery on my back. I have a steel plate in my right wrist, and there is days that I can't, I pray for the pain to go away. And I was like thinking about the surgery, and I'm like, oh man, I'm going to get something that's going to help take this pain away. And like, my mind started working like, well, you're going to take the pain away, and they're going to have these, and you can do this and you can do that. And like, the old addict mentality came back to me, and it was so scary. Like, I had to talk about it, because and not talking about it, I would have done it. Like, I know that by the end of the day, I probably would have been somewhere with somebody using something to not only numb the thoughts, numb the pain, but to numb the pain. And I just can't believe that I can't believe that I'm on a podcast talking about recovery. I've never thought in my life that this would even be a highlight of my life. I thought that I was going to be one of those guys on that you see like on intervention that says, F you, I ain't doing this. Because for the longest time I was, there was just no cameras. Not real ones. The Figment ones I thought were following me around for the longest time. But that's a whole nother subject. Meth did dangerous things to me. Put me in very bad situations. Made me think things were going on that weren't going on. I seen things that weren't real. I felt things that weren't real. And it's to even sit back, like when I was in prison, like I sat and thought about that car accident with me and that girl. And it just like every time I thought about it, I would just like what is going on? Like, and like the crazy part about it was I thought that was okay. Like her car got impounded. 3 days later, we got it out of impound. 3 days later, I'm back driving again. No license, inebriated, behind the wheel. Unmanageable freaking lifestyle. Sorry, I'm trying not to swear. But like I've worked the steps. I'm currently on step 10 in the AA recovery in the city that I live in. And it wasn't easy. Like when I first looked in them steps, they were the 12 steps of hell. Like I got to admit I'm powerless. I got to admit that I have an addiction. I got to tell somebody my deepest, darkest secrets and expect them to not tell somebody else. I've done that before. It's backfired. I ain't doing it again. And I literally had to sit down and have my conversation with my sponsor. Be like, listen, I have trusted people with things in my life and I've been hurt by my own words. I need to know that I can trust you with what I'm saying. And that's when he told me some of the things that he did. And it made it easier to confide in somebody knowing that their life was just as effed up as mine. Me and my sponsor have similarities, very, very big similarities. But we're able to work through them because we know that if we go back out, we lose everything that we got. I mean, I may only have 16, I think I got 508 days of sobriety. I might be selling myself short. I might have a little bit longer than that. But it's every day that counts. Like I was just sitting down talking to him last night. I've had my sponsor for over a year. And it's so much has happened in a year that I can't even put it into words. Like it has, well, I can't, one, momentous. It has been one hell of a momentous year. Like there's so many moments, like the ahas and listening to somebody and giving my lead, my first lead. Like I was so nervous. But in telling my story, like I had like one of the guys that I look up to, he has like 35 years of recovery. He gave me an attaboy. And like, I don't know like if that means anything to you, but it does to me because this man is a man of few words. But when he does speak, it speaks volumes. And I keep him with me. He's part of my we. He's part of my circle. When I'm going through something, I call this man. Him and his wife, his girlfriend, both love me to death. Like, I have a lot of friends in recovery, and I have a lot of friends that I'm trying to bring with me on this journey. Some of them are as stubborn as I was. Some of them have gotten it. Some of them never will. And every night before I go to bed, I say my prayers to my gods, Odin being one of them, that man back there. I pray for every addict that picks up the first drug and the one that never got to put it down. Because fortunate enough for me, my sobriety date can change, but the rest are etched in stone and they'll never get that chance. Like I don't want to go into my afterlife not knowing what my afterlife is without the mindset of sobriety. Like I can't see going into my next life, whether it be reincarnated or going to the halls with my brothers, my fallen soldiers, and being in that frame of mind of inebriation for the rest of eternity. I can't do it. I want to go out knowing that I did everything that I could to be the best version of me that I could be. I don't know if any of this made sense to you guys, but I really, really needed this tonight. I'm just an addict that wants to live. My name is Brian, and I am a grateful recovering addict. I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. You've got one hell of a story. And I mean, it's really inspiring too, because like you've had your ups and your downs, but you didn't let your downs keep you down. And I think that is a super, super important part about recovery in general, because we're going to have those moments where, like you said, in between here and 45 years later, there can be a ton of things that happen that can just make someone snap. And to keep going strong is tremendous. And one of the things that you also talked about was how being able to talk about your feelings for your cravings or being afraid of something, that's a huge step, not just for an addict and someone in recovery, but for men. I mean,
yeah, we were filtered as kids, and men don't talk about shit.
Yeah,
we don't talk about it. Don't just keep it inside. Worry about it later. Go work it off. Go drink it off. Go do something to get it off your mind.
Shove it in a little bottle. Throw it away.
Yep. I put an analogy together one time. Like if I keep like my thoughts and my actions are like the carbonation in this bottle.
Mm.
I keep all of them in there, and it builds up and it builds up and it builds up, and the pressure builds up and the pressure builds up, and sooner or later that top goes boom and flies off.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thoughts and my emotions. When that top flies off, I'm uncontrollable. I'm unconsolable. I'm unpredictable.
Yep. And then there's no telling if or when those bubbles will stop either. And I don't know about you, but whenever my top is popped, it usually happens in the worst time, and I end up doing the things that I really didn't want to do or didn't mean, or saying really mean and hurtful things to people that I didn't even want to. And it's just one of those things that it causes me so much grief to hold in that kind of stuff, that's what will keep me sick. And so for you to be able to sit there and say that it's okay to not be okay is huge, because mm-hmm. we get to sit there and we get to help each other through these kind of things. And like you said, you really needed this. Like, how am I supposed to know that unless you tell me? Right?
Yep.
And part of sharing stories in my experience is it's healing in a weird way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there's just something about it that just makes it just, like, so... It's beautiful in a sense. And, like, it's amazing to hear, like, part of my story and your story, and hear you in me. And it just shows me that there's so much that is interconnected, and yet it's almost the exact same story, just from a different perspective, a different narrative. And it's one of those things that also reminds me that I'm not fucking alone in this, you know? I'm not alone, and that's a huge thing. So for you to be able to sit there and tell everyone else, like, yo, give you a call, that's a huge step. Like, I don't even know if you realize what you just opened up that kind of can of worms to.
Yeah, one of the things, like, I have two home groups, three home groups. Friday night, marble group, and one of the gentlemen there says, all of our stories are the same.
Mm-hmm.
With the addiction, misery, the pain, the strife. The only thing that's different is the amends that we have to make.
Ooh. Oh. I'd never thought about it that way. Oh, he's right. He's right.
Yeah. I mean, we've all the perfectly imperfect life that we lived.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's different from our lives is the people that we have to make it up to.
Yeah. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but that's a hard part. Like, and then not only to the others, but to myself is a huge one too.
Yeah. I went home with my sister, I want to say it was probably about 3 weeks to a month ago now. And like 3 weeks before that, I was talking to her. I was like, listen, I got to tell you something. And I'm freaking out about it. And she's like, what's going on? And I admitted to her that I had stolen money from our father. And I had to tell her, like, I told her, I was like, I have to tell him. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. She's like, he already knows. Don't beat yourself up about it. I'm like, all right. I still did. Still mentally. Like, I have to admit something to a man that's given me everything in this fucking world in the short period of time since 2014 since I met him. And, like, when I walked into the house, I think it was 2-3 weeks ago, I went, like, we were on our way down. I was like, sis, yes, like, I got to tell you something. She's like, what? I was like, remember what I talked to you about on the phone? She's like, yeah, I said, I'm telling dad today. She's like, we're turning it off. I was like, no, we're not. I was like, I have to do this. Like, with, like, it states in step 9, made direct amends wherever possible. Mm-hmm. I was going on this trip. I was going to see my father. That amends had to be made. And when I walked out on the porch and I looked right at him and I was like, listen, I got to tell you some things. And he's like, all right. And I sat down and I told him, I was like, when I'm an addict. Mm-hmm. And when I am in active addiction, I do things that are out of my character that make me not who I am. And he's like, I know. I was like, I want to let you know that I'm the one that stole the money out of your truck. He's like, I know. You think I'm stupid? And it's like, I told him, I was like, I kind of figured you did know. And he's like, it's not the fact that you stole the money from me and his girlfriend. It's the fact of how you reacted. I blew up just like I did on my PO. Mm-hmm. I blew up. How dare you blame me for stealing this? I'm the only one around here. Blah, 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 blah. And just like hearing how I reacted to being caught. Mm-hmm. It just.
The fear.
I don't want that life no more. I don't want that life no more. If I can save one person's life by telling my story, then I have achieved greatness. That's my level of greatness. Yeah. If I can help somebody get their life together,
and
call me, message me. I have references. If I can't find it, I got a sponsor who can find it. If he can't find it, he's got a sponsor and he's got a sponsor. And I got family online that I can reach out to. I mean, we are not alone. Yeah. We are not alone.
Not even a little. And one of the beautiful things about this is that you have no idea who you're going to reach. And isn't that crazy? Like, you literally have no idea who's going to be hearing it, and you're going to say something, and the light bulb just ding. Goes off in their head.
I'm about to be on television and it's not in 10 top wanted.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, that baffled me. When you told me that, I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's one of the things too, is that it's like, whenever we're in the middle of our addiction, I had you told me even just last year that this would be where it's at, I would have called you a filthy liar. Like, my recovery would have been like, maybe you need to listen to him a little bit. But at the same time, I was like, this was not the goal really to get it to where it is. The goal was to help people. And that's the thing, is that I didn't know who was listening. And the only thing I cared about was trying to help at least one person. And now it's going all over. And so is your story. Your story is going to be able to sit there and tell other people you're not alone. It's okay to not be okay. And no matter what, you have someone to reach out to. And even if it's not you in particular, that might just trigger someone to be like, oh, I got this friend from way back when, or I got this guy that has a lot of experience with life. And one of the things that you said early on too, you hung out with the older crowd. Because you were wanting that experience and stuff. And I think that shows a lot of wisdom and age in your soul, even, because a lot of people don't learn from secondhand knowledge and stuff like that. A lot of people go ahead.
I was told one time by a lady friend of mine that I was reincarnated from an old Southern boy because of the way that I carry myself. Like, yeah. Yeah.
I can see that. I think you and I are going to be some of the first people to tell them. And I know they've heard it from me. This recovery road is not easy, but it is well worth it.
It's hella worth it. It's definitely worth it.
Like, I never
everything that you lost in life, you can get back.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you lost. I lost my family. I lost respect of my loved ones. I got my family back. I got my loved ones back. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I heard when I still hear it today. If you're new, keep coming back. And we will love you until you learn how to love yourself.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to love myself. Like, I got a full body mirror right there. And, like, except, like, it's full of stickers, like recovery stickers and stupid stickers and stuff like that. But, like, the main part is, like, where my head is. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time, even to shave. Like, I would just, like, not make contact. I'd just look in the mirror, just take my cuts, do what I had to do, and I could never make eye contact. When I was finally able to do that, it was a totally enlightening experience because it was the day that I told myself that you're worth it.
Oof.
Yeah, like, it was like, oh, I just happened to, like, look down and I caught my eyes and I was like, you just gotta stop doing this dumb shit. You're worth more than you're letting yourself have.
Mm. Oh man, I don't know about you, but that's making me tear up, you know.
Like, I'm my own worst enemy, but I'm my own best friend. Like, he's stupid.
Remember, kids and everyone else watching and listening, don't do what we did. These are examples of things to not do, not things to try. We're
the reason you can't get away with half the stuff that you try to do now.
Yeah. You know, behind every law and every rule, there's a story behind it, and we're probably some of them.
Yeah, and most wanted mugshot. Yep.
Remember, if you see a most wanted mugshot of Brian Matthew, it's not this guy.
No, it's the other one.
Yeah, it's the other one. The other one has a black bandana on, okay?
Yeah, yeah. shit. But man, holy crap, that's late.
Yes, sir. But all right. Well,
I definitely appreciate the opportunity to do this. And if there is anybody out there actually that stuck around for this whole period of time, just give yourself a chance.
Yeah.
Because no matter what you've been through, you absolutely deserve a good life. And I love you. I'm Brian, and I am nothing but a grateful recovering addict. I love you all.
Love you too, Brian. Thank you for being on. Catch you next time.
Night, brother.
Shalom.